This is SaaS Scaled, the podcast where data meets action with host Armon Shrocky. Each week, Armon will be sitting down with CEOs and industry leaders from the technology sector, giving you the insight to innovate without reinventing the wheel. They'll discuss challenges, best practices, and how to identify the right metrics. So if you want to get to market faster and in a way that matters, then subscribe and join us every week as we discuss SaaS Scale. This episode is brought to you by Curvey, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.
Hello, welcome to another episode of SaaS Scaled. I'm pleased to have Mads Persson here from a company in Denmark, and he will tell us about his story and the company's story. And I had a chance to speak with him for about 10, 15 minutes now, and I'm already looking forward to our discussion, and I'm pretty sure I will learn quite a few things from him. So Mads, welcome to SaaS Scaled. Please tell us a little bit about yourself and about the company as well.
No, thank you, Armon. Pleasure to be here. Absolutely. Whether you will learn a lot from this conversation or not, we will see. I'll do my best. I'm the CEO for Umbraco. As you say, it's a Danish company, but we are a truly worldwide company. We are present in the every corner of the world. And I will get back to that a little bit later, but we're definitely an international company, as it is. Actually, the name Umbraco is the Danish name for the little key you get in an IKEA package. I'm Swedish, by the way, so I think it's hard to go. That little thing, you know, you use to put everything together, that's an Umbraco key in Danish. So it's a little bit twist on that. Umbraco is a platform. A CMS platform. It's an open source. So on top of Umbraco, you're building web pages of various scales, from small, medium-sized businesses up to large businesses. And we put a pride into that it is a platform. Build what you want, how you want it. So we're the open source community that we might talk about a little bit later on, is an exciting superpower of our organization. So even though we are 160 people in my organization, we have we estimated to be about 3,000 community members around the globe. Since we're on open source, we can't track the number of installs as it is. It's not part of open source. It's the credo of that. But I would put my head out and say that we are the second largest CMS system in the world. WordPress is, of course, bigger, which is tailored for very small businesses, while we are then from small to medium upwards. So that's where we are as a company. We put ourselves through to be the friendly CMS. And honestly, if I reflect on that, when I started in the company, which I did a year ago now, 1st of September, I was a little bit skeptical about having a tagline that you're a friendly company. That means a lot if you put yourself out there. Why would you spell it out? It's a little bit suspicious. It's like having a sign in a house saying that in this house, we don't kill people. Well, that's a good sign, right? But there is a reason to hang it there. So why do we need to spell out that we're friendly? But we are. We're perceived by customers, by partners, also internally and in the entire ecosystem to be friendly. And I personally think that's in these days, it's a good tagline to have.
Yeah. Fantastic. You mentioned a couple of things. CMS, of course, content management system, open source is another big topic. Definitely we'll talk about it. Also, I cannot stop thinking about AI and the role of AI in CMS. When you are developing content and you are managing the content in the age of AI, many people would expect some big changes coming in the near future. How would you see those changes coming based on what we see in the AI technologies today?
Yeah, no, it's very, I would say it's even, it's already here. And yes, there will be changes. But I just want to reflect a little bit where we are. I usually say I'm not old, but I've been around. And I've been around for that long. So I was part of the e-business hype back in 2000. Internet were coming. The hype around internet back then, that everyone, within 6 months, everything will change. And I read a couple of months ago a statement that said that it's proven in research that we, as human beings and in business around technology, we are constantly overestimating the short-term impact and underestimating the long-term impact. Back then, we were talking about, and I remember I was out presenting myself, being a young technician back then. I'm a software developer from the start, so I was, a trustworthy young person that could talk about internet. So I talked about the fact that everything in a short while, within a couple of years, everyone around the globe will have access to all information in a device big as a size or the size of a palm. And that was quite futuristic, and everyone, hallelujah, this will be a significant impact. Everyone talked about that which should happen within a year or two. It didn't. It took about 10 years. But we all know what we're doing today, right? The impact of mobile phones, what we do, how we communicate, all that. If you just go back, yes, that's what we predicted. But we underestimated the long-term impact. It's enormous, but it takes time. That's what it is. And we overestimate the short-term impact. A little bit side story is that when I was out presenting this hallelujah situation where everyone got access to it, I forgot that all the crap things, all misleading information will also be spread to everyone. And here we are now. So yes, there were long-term impact of what we saw coming back then in 25 years ago that we couldn't really see the whole part we are. But that's not purpose of what we're talking about here now, but that's, of course, an impact of what it is. So yes, AI will have a significant impact on the long term, but we tend to over-exaggerate the short-term impact. With that said, we're not putting our heads in the sand and say that this is not something for us. But I just want to balance that a little bit. So we take a balanced approach to it. And a couple of things that we see as a CMS system is that I believe that long-term, a content management system will always survive. We will survive because it's just in the name, content management system. There is no company out there in the world that I know of that would not like to own their own story, their own product sources, their own shop, the business they do online, that they would just put that out on some server anywhere in the cloud and then see what happens. That's not going to happen. So they will definitely keep their, how do you want to communicate with your clients? What is the workflow you do that, the business you do online? But of course, there's a couple of things changing in there. And you could start with what we see now is that also the customer journey, for example, is changing rapidly the way the customer journey looks like. When it's previously been, okay, we consult some kind of Google just list of things, maybe Forrester Gartner or something, and then we have maybe a consultant getting in, helping us to sure do a short list, and then we contact each of those 15 companies. They come in with you respond to an RFQ, and then you get a short list, and there is an RFP, and then you go further on. That's the customer journey. That's kind of a step approach. Now what you see, given the access to AI, people are way more informed. They do their search their own. We see a dramatic rate down drop in book a demo. If you go onto a website, go anywhere on the net and you visit a company, they all want you to sign up for a demo, right? That's the first thing that pops out. Newsletter and demo. People don't want that. I'm over-exaggerating a little bit. But in essence, we can see that people are way more informed thanks to AI. So that puts another pressure on to companies and how you're present. We all know about SEO, search engine optimization. Someone said it took us 10 years to understand how Google works, but I don't think that, but say 5 years. Everyone knows that. There are experts out there, SEO experts. You know how to do that. We know how we enable websites to be SEO optimized. It's the keywords, it's the one, you know that, how to do that. And it's Google mainly you optimize it for. When you talk about, there are various names to it, but I would say the generative engine optimization, the GEO, just to stick to that, but it's the AI optimization, you can call it. There's not a standard word for it, but someone refers to it as a GEO. And how do you optimize towards that? Well, first and for all, there's not one system. There's many of them, and there's new one coming. All of them have different approaches. So there is no standard yet. I've done some, read some research. There's been some surveys onto it, and there is no standard yet. There is no one that can say this is the way you should go about it. What we know is that they do scrape. They do go out and search the internet. That's where you go. ChatGPT. Oh, I will be with you in a second. I've searched the internet, and you can see where they go, right? So start searching through that. But there is also various components in that when they do search like that. Response time, for example. Sites that are too slow, they just abandon, then they go further on. So first and for all, if you don't have a site that performs, that even can't respond, you're out. And then you could ultimately be out of getting onto a short list at all, because ChatGPT won't even find you if the customer asks, what are the best ones? So performance is one thing, availability. But then also, we talk about the gated and ungated information. So where you have gated information is typically things that you, now we don't put that on our website. We take that in a demo. When we start talking to our clients, we will kind of reveal that. Now we just pay interest, there's colors, there's all of that. You recognize it, right? And we drive it through the funnel down towards a demo. Then we will tell them, sorry, if the circle is not, or the line is not that perfect, it's rather a circle, or how you metaphorically show it, that the customers are more informed, you need to provide more gated information and make them ungated. What we see and what we discuss now is that there might be functionality where you, okay, that is kind of a way to make, see through that white papers, but maybe price lists, maybe product information, deep product features, functionalities. You need to add values to, or what's called long tail words to your product information or your company or your restaurant for that sake. And long tail words means typically words like when it comes to a restaurant, for example, near the subway station, cozy atmosphere, best pasta, whatever you believe that people would search for. If you're a product company selling things, what are the long tail words that comes to, typically will come into? Features like combustion engine, power, effect, whatever it might be. And if you want to crowd your normal homepage with that, it's going to be extremely crowded, a big conflict with the marketing department, because that's typically not what they want. They want to convey a clean message, an atmosphere, a feeling. So what we see is that there might be that you work with the gated, ungated. So there will be a, now it's not going to call dark side, because that's the dark net. It's not what we're doing that. But you have to publish that, so you make it available. And that one is super easy for AI bots to scrape, understand, and gather. Mm-hmm. So back to the way we, what we know when it comes to so far, what is important for all of these different AI engines is that ranking matters. Wikipedia is important. That's why we see also that some countries around the globe that wants to convey their kind of philosophy about the world, they are now putting in more and more Wikipedia pages that are very low key. They don't have it, but they're still available. So they are then passing on that. As I said, ratings and Wikipedia are long-term words. But here's a dramatic evolution needs to be done. How do you actually get there? Because it's not just for the fun of it. This is where people turn to. This is where the customer journey starts. And how you manage that. And for us, being also dealing with customers in a certain journey, we're talking about being able to handle that chaos in the middle or something, that customers are coming in. There could be customers that are coming in straight into our super informed, and they just want to know a couple of features because they've seen. There are also some in the beginning. It's not a straight step. They're more informed, as I said. That's what AI gives you. And I can give you a story about a partner, how important this is, because given the way currently, I would say that, maybe I get back to that later, but currently the answers you get back from any, I mean, ChatGPT, for example, it is so trustworthy, right? You trust them. It's they pad it out, they mind a little bit of it. So when they recommend something, there's no real reason to question that. So here's a true story. It about 6 months old, but we have a partner in Minneapolis, and they work in that region around there. And suddenly there were a customer, a client from Washington, D.C. that called them and said, we would like to work with you. It wasn't even a question. We would like to work with you. Good. Why? Can we ask you why? Well, we asked ChatGPT that we're not satisfied with the current vendor we're working with, or partner we're working with, and they put the name in there. Could you recommend us something with the same capabilities with focus onto? And they put two keywords in there, and it spit it out there. They don't know why. They don't know how. They tried to dig into it. They realized that SEO is still important. So don't leave that. It's still important for GEO also, and AI optimization. SEO is still important. But at the end of the day, they really don't know how that popped up, that they were ranked number one. They don't have any, they can't find any ratings anywhere that they were rated the best US company in this field or anything. It just came out of there. So that's a true story about A, how important this is, and B, that there's still a way to go to understand that, to get to the level of understanding that we are around the SEO.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely. And we see that the data suggests that using AI as a search engine, that percentage is increasing. And more increasingly, more people really go and use actually ChatGPT or any other AI engine they are using, one of these LLMs as kind of their search engine. And it's not like majority is still not using Google. Google is still very, very important to people. But we, you know, have seen that data suggests people increasingly are relying on AI engines for search results as well.
Oh yeah. And I think, now talking against myself, that should not be underestimated. I said we're overestimating short-term impact, but that should not be underestimated. I see my kids. I see the way I do it myself. It is rapidly moving that way. Google is trying to, they provide also some, you know, on top of the commercial things that they have, they're providing some parts of it, but there are the other ones that are taking over now. Absolutely. People consult that way more, and it's coming and it's happening now. So that's for sure. The interesting part of it, if I were just to continue on what we see on our side, we use AI also in our development. We are, and I know there's been discussions here with some more informed people that and talking about what AI will mean for software developers how you build. Since we are a platform where you build on top of, and we are an open source, and there are also marketplace where plugins are on top of it. AI, in the sense of how you build features and configure Umbraco, is of course then important for us. If we were a suite with every features ready to go and just being configured, that might be less. But in this case, we need to address that also. And we've been fortunate that we spent quite a significant amount of time 2 years ago to make our whole platform API enabled. Maybe a little bit of an overestimation back then. There hasn't been used too much, but there's a couple of APIs that's been used frequently, but not all of them by far. But now it turns out, when we looked into this a couple of months ago, and when the MCP server, contextual protocol. Well, I might be wrong in the abbreviation there, but that's the standard how agents talks to agents, the MCP. It's the XML protocol for agents, how they speak to it. And it's picking up as a standard. There might be others, but I think all the major chatbots out there or AI engines are picking that up. So what we could do is that easily take all our documentation about our APIs, put that into the project, the MCP project, and you will then get an MCP server enabled. So hold our product is then MCP enabled, which means that you can take more or less any chat AI and engine and put that into and go into the chat and drive and configure our platform. You can build things directly, ask for that, and build and implement it. But you can also, both in configuration and setup, you have the ability to do everything in the system. But you can also, when you maintain a system with it, get the the way you work with your platform. So take, for example, a small e-shop, which is one of the examples we have. You're selling a couple of hundred products that you sell. You have some pushing some information on your front side. Here's the best buy. You know, you have the experience as it is. Right? This is kind of a guess and tell you a little bit of the feeling of it. Then if you use an AI and you provide that information to it, you can drop an Excel sheet with the last 6 months or a year sales results for your product. And the AI will then start reasoning about what is the best marketing campaign you can do based upon the existing collaterals and information you have and material you have on your site, suggest campaigns on the forefront, and even execute it. So you can then reason with it. And the best thing with this is that two things. One is that you get all the knowledge around it, how they can suggest things to you, which is based upon massive amount of data, sales statistics, how it operates, visitors. You could do various statistics from the site, feed that into the engine, and you will get suggestions on top of it. But the second thing is that if you work with an API, you get either you are compliant with it or you get an error code. And then you have to try to redo it. What the engine does, the MCP server, is that it reasons around it. If it doesn't work, then it reasons to go around. If that doesn't apply to the configuration rules or the APIs, it returns an error code, it reasons and try to go around it, and therefore. So at the end of the day, you can ask yourself, what will happen with the GUI? What will happen? How will the internet look like in 5 years? If I take this further up to a bigger question. With AI in there, where you search, but you can also run, and you can then agents to agents, system to system, you can use that. I would say we're almost getting back to where I started my computer science or my computer journey is on the command prompt. And that's, of course, limitations. I remember, and I'm that old, I remember when the first graphical user interface were coming, Apple and Windows and menus and all that. And I don't think we're going to go. We're super excited about what we can do on the command prompt now and the intelligence we can get there. But there is an end to how much we're going to prompt that, because that is just sitting and prompting if you do more things to it, which you normally orientate yourself in your user interface. And I'm excited to see, and I'm interested to see how this is going to develop. When will we see the first graphical user interface on top of how you run ChatGPT? I don't know. It's a question for the future.
Yeah, no, definitely that's interesting. We have seen definitely the ChatGPT. We have seen agents that take action as well. And as you mentioned, you know, this kind of model context protocol or MCP can further push kind of agents and AI agents to be more effective and really, you know, having that unified kind of interaction that they can go to different sources. Now, you know, when you offer that kind of service and say this is MCP compliant, and people build websites that can be MCP compliant, that opens the door for many other AI agents to come in and then start, you know, interacting with it and getting more visibility. But one question that comes to my mind when it comes to really open source, and you mentioned writing code using AI technologies and letting AI help you with that, and being open source and with the AI advancements that we see in the code generation kind of context, what are the pros and cons? What are the pluses and minuses that comes to your mind with regard to open source and AI helping us to write code?
Yeah. It's very compatible. We were very early. We could see in our marketplace that there were plugins and AI enabled tools coming in, various, some of them more limited or narrowed, I would say, in their first attempt. How do you update content in an easy way in Umbraco? How do you manage a certain way of defining and running various activities on our platform, given our structure as it is? So those type of, and I think we have, last time I looked, we had more than 20 plugins that are AI enabled. If I check today, there will be more. So yes, the community and the open source, well, especially the communities, are providing add-ons to the system itself. When it looks to the core system, where the contribution from the communities are coming in, we don't see a heavy usage of AI there at the moment. These are back-end system, heavy architectural things. These are important things for the whole content management system to perform and stay intact, right, with the highest quality there is. We see that we are, in our own development, using it as a tool to first version, build me that, and easier tasks as it is, but then reviewing carefully, see to what we put in there. So there are, and there might be, or there are coming also, surely, some contributions into our source code that are AI generated by someone. But I think the software developer, these people out there that are in your community, they are hardcore software developers. Of them. So they put pride in the quality of it. Of course, they are using AI as a prototype, first thing, hack it, and then you do, you know, evolutions and you get recommendations of it. But they are still using it as a software development tool, not just firing off contributions and suggestions into the platform en masse, just because you can do it with AI. So I don't think so. We have not seen any tendency of that, at least not what I've heard of.
Okay. And then let's change gears. I have a couple of questions that probably are not super connected and related to each other, but I would like to ask you, because this question about just in general entrepreneurship, about software industry, founders starting or other people start, you know, helping to grow the companies. And you have been in some of these companies, large and small. You have seen some, you know, some of them winning, growing fast, some of them not doing so great. From your perspective, if there are some listeners here that they are at the earliest stage of this journey and they wanted to really go and start a company today, start a software company, a SaaS business, something like that, from your perspective, what would be the quick advice that you have for them, especially at this time that you know this new technology is coming and, you know, based on every experience that you have had, what would be, you know, your 2-minute, 3-minute advice to them, very quick? If I have to tell you one thing, this would be something I will tell you.
Yeah. The world is unpredictable. That's I've learned. You always need to have a plan, but the plan will change. So when you're looking at, and the reason for we are so attracted to listen to all these unicorns, entrepreneurs that are successful, and we love to hear about how $1 million and $1 trillion it is, right? How valuable this has become. But I like Frans Johansson has written a book called Click Moment, which was an epiphany for me. That really boils it down to that the absolute majority, if not all of these success stories, there is a portion of luck in there. At one point in their evolution, they were lucky. They were at the right time at the right spot. There are many examples of that. One of my favorites is Absolut Vodka, for example. They're tremendous success out of Sweden. The biggest export thing we have. We have ABBA, IKEA, and Absolut Vodka. That's what we export. At the end of the day, they don't know what happened. It was a strategic thing. They were just in the right place in New York at the right time, and it just shoot it off. So he takes that as an example. He takes others. One of the characteristics of this, many of these entrepreneurs that have been extremely successful, when they want to redo it, they often fail because it is a portion of it. So what he talks about there, which has resonated so well with me, which I've taken on to all my leadership positions I have, is that the world is unpredictable, but it's a matter of to have a plan, a vision, a mission, what we're going to do, what is our purpose. But then you put your bets carefully at the lowest cost possible. So it's worth repeating. So identify, because bets, I like that. Because if you fail on a bet, it's not a hell of a lot. If you talk about must-win battles or anything like that, it's very dramatic. If we fail on that, we're dead. No, a bet is something that you could survive. You still do bets at lowest cost possible. Then you evaluate, and that's the tricky thing. And I say quite often, there are three things that can happen when you put a bet out there. One is, of course, it's flying through the roof. There is no doubt about that. Throw everything there is at it. Out, get more money. This is so easy to say. This is, we hit something. We don't know. We just hit a gold mine. Go, dig, 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 go. That's the best thing. The second best thing is nothing happens. Then you have a good story and you can close it down quickly. That was a good idea, but man, were we wrong or not? That just happened. Or something happened. Some country gets invaded. There's a pandemic or anything else that might stop you. That is completely unforeseen. The worst case is where in the middle ground, where many hands up, is a little bit, maybe, yeah, up and down. Whatever. And that's where you need to be quite brutal about your bets. Don't over-exaggerate. Don't be too excited about your internal. You've been workshops internally and everyone's so geared up about, we have developed the best things since sliced bread. And then when you get out to the market, it turns out not be that good. But self-critical. Don't be too enthusiastic about your own opportunity and your product. But then focus on where's the bets. And there is no entrepreneurship. There is no company almost that have a straight line. You always started somewhere. Then it turned out we got a big client in. They asked if we can do that. So we turned into that. And it turned out that not selling only books were a good thing. We have a lot of servers. So why don't we do a server and make something called AWS? You know, that's the way. They never took. Amazon never started off saying, we're going to be the biggest cloud provider in the world. No, they figured that out later on, which was something. It was a coincidence. So coincidence, and then put your bets carefully, but then also expose yourself to coincidence. That's where you find. So don't go to fairs and, you know, meeting up with everyone that knows everything. Try to expose yourself to coincidences. The more you do that, that's why the brutal entrepreneurs that are all over, they are brilliant on that. They're all over. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, that's one of that. Some of them go over the top, but that's what characteristics an entrepreneur is, that they constantly expose themselves to coincidence and they put their bets, maybe not as careful as possible, but it gives a framework. For me, being very structured, being a guy that wants to do sequential things, strategy, plan, mission, then it turns out that the world doesn't look like that. The world is unpredictable.
Great. No, that was fantastic. And then another unrelated question here. If you had to choose a city, someone came to you and said, out of all of these cities and different countries maybe, or within some particular countries that you have visited, if I have 2 weeks to go and travel and I can choose any 2 weeks I want, which city I should go, what would be your recommendation?
Oh, there are many places. 2 weeks?
2 weeks, yeah. I have 2 weeks to go, and I'm asking you, which city would you recommend me to go and visit that you have been really enjoying yourself when you were there and you like?
I think you should go to Munich. Munich is a big international city. It will give you a lot of international or city experience, but it's an easy travel to the Alps. And then you just go through a tunnel through the mountains. If you want to, you're down by the Riviera. So you get everything of it's a very short travel.
And you should go there during Oktoberfest or outside Oktoberfest?
Outside, I would say. Outside.
Okay.
Outside. If you want to party like that and festivals, then they're absolutely Oktoberfest. Munich is a really, I would say, really nice located Bavarian city there. So, yeah.
Great. And my last question, can you recommend a book that you liked it, either personally or professionally, that has been very impactful in what you do?
Yeah, I mentioned the click moment there, which pans out this. That resonated with me. But then another classic one is, of course, Drive with Daniel Pink. When that came out and I read it, I was in my career starting building bonus systems and what drives people's incentives and all that. And that has led on to something called the total motivation. What motivates me as a leader? I think it's the key thing for us as a leader is to create motivation, create a framework for people to be motivated in. As a leader, you can never outsource, or an individual can never outsource your motivation to your leader. But the leader is responsible to create a framework for it. And that's what Daniel Pink talks about. Why bonuses really don't work. In some areas, in the majority of the work, it doesn't. And what stimulates and move people. And research tests on that. What is the highest motivator for people? It's not money. And it's not the career path. There are also motivators, but the top motivation is your role description. What am I supposed to do? How do I get successful? How do I get remunerated for this? What's my role in this? Where do I play into this team? How do I become and be part of the winning team? You can use sports metaphor as much as you want there, but that's essentially what it is about. In a football team, what am I role? How do I get successful? And that is so obvious in sports, because otherwise there will be no victories. In business, that should be used also, ensuring that people in your team understand what they do, how they become successful. And then don't forget to praise them when they're doing a good job. Everyone wants to get a tap on the shoulder and say, that was really good.
Fantastic.
Which I know you can do, Armand, after this call. This was really good, Matt.
Well, so I was absolutely right when I said I would learn quite a few things. So it was really educational for me. We had a great discussion. I hope everybody else liked it too. And thank you very much for joining me, Matt.
Thank you, Armand. It was a pleasure to be here.
Thank you for listening to SaaS Scaled with Armand Ashraghi. For show notes and any resources mentioned in today's episode, go to saasscaled.com. If you're enjoying our show, give us a 5-star review and share on LinkedIn. And be sure to subscribe for any updates on future episodes. Thanks for listening. This episode is brought to you by Curve, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.